This week on Art on the Air, our whole show features a focus on the Chesterton Art Center, first with local artist, sculptor, and single dad, Billy Pazzo, and his artist daughter, Polly Pazzo, discussing their unique art exhibit. Next, the new education director, Kara Schmidt, discusses classes at the Art Center. Our spotlights on the first exhibit at the Art Center with executive director, Hannah Hammond-Hagman, plus other events in the new year.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world.
Welcome. You're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, WVLP, 103.1 FM, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. I'm Larry Breckner of New Perspectives Photography, right alongside here with Esther Golden of The Nest in Michigan City.
Aloha, everyone.
We're your hosts for Art on the Air. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant, South Shore Arts, and the National Endowment for the Arts. Art on the Air is heard every Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicmedia.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Media's website as a podcast. Also heard on Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at wvlp.org. Our spotlight interviews are also heard Wednesdays on Lakeshore Public Media. Information about Art on the Air is available at our website, breck.com/AOTA. That includes a complete show archive, spotlight interviews, plus our show is available on multiple podcast platforms, including NPR One. Please like us on Facebook, Art on the Air, WVLP, for information about upcoming shows and interviews. And we'd like to welcome back to Art on the Air Spotlight. And in fact, this entire show is going to be about the Chesterton Art Center things happening through the whole interview. But this is the Spotlight section, and we're going to hear with the Executive Director, Hannah Hammond-Hagman. What we're doing at the Art Center, some great exhibits coming up in January and also in 2025. Hannah, welcome back to Art on the Air Spotlight.
It's always good to be with you guys. Thank you. And how exciting.
It's so good to see you, Hannah.
You too. And it's so fun that we get a whole little show about the Art Center. Thank you both.
Well, tell us about the exhibit you have coming up. I know you just finished the members show in December. That's kind of a tradition. Always fun. I know that's usually packed pretty solid. Tell us about what we have coming up.
We always love to end our year and start the year with our members exhibition, right? It reminds us who we are. So in January through February, actually, we're welcoming two artists. It's a dual exhibition, a father and daughter, Billy and Polly Pozzo. Their work will be in our galleries January 16th through March 1st of 2025. This is an exhibition I'm really very excited about. It will showcase Billy Pozzo's paintings, drawings, and sculptures. He is a meticulous craftsperson. His sculptures and small dioramas, his large-scale graphite self-portraits will be interspersed with the work of his daughter, Polly. So it'll be some synergy, right, of the two of them together. Polly lives with a rare form of muscular dystrophy, which is means that she neither walks or speaks, but she and Billy create the most beautiful paintings together. And so we'll have both artists in our exhibit through March. And there'll be an artist talk on January 25th, where you can meet Billy and Polly both and talk about their process and about their bodies of work. And then there's also the artist reception will be Saturday, January 25th from noon to 2, where you can meet both artists. And then there will be an artist talk with Billy on February 8th at noon. And during that time, we'll also screen a short documentary created by Leslie Nuss that features the two of them making art together as they do in their studio. So we hope the public is invited, of course, to join us for those events that are free and open to the public. But this is a really beautiful story about two artists and a father and a daughter who work together. And it's a story that needs to be heard and shared. It's about family resilience, unconditional love, and the power of art that connects us all. So I think it's going to be a really meaningful exhibit, and I'm really excited to share it with the community.
And knowing their story, poly requires basically round-the-clock care.
Yep.
And the difficulty there is Billy's wife passed away.
Correct.
And so now, you know, adds a lot to the story and about their journey that the two of them have together in creating art. And, of course, the salvation that, you know, how art can be kind of a bridge and what a lot of people might be uncomfortable with, a great way to show how they can be that. So what a great.
I know.
Did they reach out to you? How did this exhibit come about?
I think, I reached out to Billy. I've known about him and his work for quite some time. I'm familiar with him. And so when it came time to start scheduling things here at the Chesterton Arts Center, I thought that it would be tremendous to have both of them here in the galleries. And I think what Larry said is just really true. I mean, this is the power of art to uplift and to connect and to transcend. So I think all of that journey is represented in the works that they both create. So it's going to be a really poignant exhibit for folks to visit.
A great exhibit for, and a great community awareness part, which is what art, besides being art, to enjoy art, to, explain and everything. Well,
yeah, and her work, what Polly does, it challenges all preconceived notions, right?
Oh, it's so beautiful and energetic and sensitive.
No, it's beautiful work. Wonderful. No, we're really very grateful and proud to put it on.
Well, and then after that exhibit, you have other things going on there. Kara is going to be talking.
Only a few.
Kara talked a little bit about that in the interview that we have later on in this show about all the classes. But tell us about more of what you have going on.
I will. We love to be busy here. You know, we can't stop ourselves. So we're going to have a really special Martin Luther King Day program. You know, we did a first kind of inaugural one last year. And so we're bringing it back. And it's a family drop-in program. And that'll happen on Monday, January 20th from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Again, it's free. We'll have more information about that on the website. You can register there and learn more about it. But it'll feature some poetry making and poetry listening, as well as some art making as well. So we really hope folks will join us for that special day. And then we roll into March, where we host the Doolin Schools student exhibitions, which is phenomenal. Again, these walls will be packed with inspiration and imagination from young artists, kindergarten through 12th grade. So it's always a treat to see all that artwork, and we hope folks come out for that as well.
Well, they sure do. I think you have almost run air conditioning in March there, even though it's all the people in the building. It's very great. And anything past the Doolin exhibit, what we have coming up after that?
April. We will have our student exhibit, right? So we do our young artists in the galleries, and that'll be our in-house kids as well as our outreach kids. And then we welcome back the Doolin Weavers Guild for their annual exhibition with us. So it'll be a very busy spring, and then we'll roll into May and June, and before you know it, the art fair is here.
No kidding. Wow. Well, in our last few moments here, website, location, and reprise on the upcoming exhibit.
You got it. So Chesterton Arts Center is located in beautiful downtown Chesterton at 115 South 4th Street. ChestertonArt.org is our website, or you can give us a call, 219-926-4711. Please come out and see the exhibit Polly and Her Dad, Billy and Polly Pozzo, from January 16th to March 1st. Reception is on the 25th of January, and the talk and the film screening are on February 8th at noon.
Sounds great. That's Executive Director Hannah Hammond-Hegman, and we appreciate her coming on the air and sharing the what's going on at Chesterton Arts Center. Thanks again.
You got it. Good to be with you.
Yeah, it's great seeing you, Hannah.
Art on the Air Spotlight and the complete one-hour program on Lakeshore Public Media is brought to you by McCauley Real Estate in Valparaiso, Olga Patrician, Senior Broker. And as a reminder, if you'd like to have your event on Art on the Air Spotlight or have a longer feature interview, email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck.com. Art on the Air encourages our loyal listeners to support this station by making a monthly sustaining pledge, so we may continue to bring you this great program. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant, South Shore Arts, and the National Endowment for the Arts.
This is Emily Yanez, Executive Director for the LaPorte County Symphony Orchestra, and you're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, and on WVLP 103.1 FM.
We are happy to welcome Billy Pozzo to Art on the Air. Billy is a local artist, sculptor, and single father to his artist daughter, Polly Pozzo. He creates large graphite and painted portraits of friends and loved ones. Also, small satirical sculptures and dioramas inspired by the people he has known. He draws inspiration from music, popular cultures, and memories, and the people that surround him, especially his daughter, Polly. She lives with a rare genetic disorder called muscle eye brain disease. Although she is not able to walk or speak, Polly creates really beautiful paintings. They will be exhibiting together. Thank you for joining us on Art on the Air. Aloha and welcome, Billy. It's wonderful meeting you. I wanted to say, though, I hesitate saying disorder, and I wanted to say Polly's superpower.
I'll agree with that, her superpower, yeah.
Well, Billy, welcome to the show. We appreciate you coming on. And we always like to have our guests share their origin story. I always say how you got from where you were to where you're now. So tell us about your whole origin.
Well, probably the first time that I was really, you know, I was always interested in art when I was a little kid. But in second grade, we went to the Brookfield Zoo. It was a field trip. And there was this lady painting the mural in the background of the environment where you couldn't tell where the foliage stopped and her painting started. And I remember asking my mom, I was like, wait, this is a job? She's like, yeah, that's a job. And I was like, well, that's the job I want right there. You know, when I was in school, I always felt locked up and I hated being in school. I didn't like, you know, just being trapped in that same room every day after. And I just, you know, I wasn't a good student, but I always liked the art and it always interests me. So that was probably the first time that I was like, if this could be a job, this is what I want to do. So, yeah, second grade was the first time I'd ever really knew that you could do that for a job and get paid for it and make a living.
So was there any art going on in elementary school or in your house? Once you said that to your mom, did she buy paints and pencils?
My mom was a painter. She took a couple little local classes and would paint on the kitchen table with oil paints. And I was just fascinated by it. And yeah, she was always very encouraging toward the art. Her and my father were, you know, my father was a truck salesman for 57 years at Mack Trucks. And his father started the Mack Truck dealership in 1921. So I kind of thought I was just going to go into the family business, but worked there when I was 16 and 17. And my dad said, now you know what you don't want to do. So I was lucky he said that because I was kind of scared to tell him that I didn't want to go into the family business and just do art. But he was very encouraging. Both my parents were.
Describe maybe middle school or high school, what your art life was like in school and what did you gravitate toward?
It was in high school when I went to Maryville High School. I had Dr. Eleanor Lewis. She'd been, you know, she taught in the Lake County for over 50 years, I think. And but she took me out of one of my classes because I was in there with all my friends and I was always goofing around. And she put me across the hall with another girl. And she said, you're going to be in independent studies. And I'm just, you know, we each got our own projects there. It was just me and one other girl in the class. Teacher was across the hall and she'd give us projects. And then I'd work on those. I think I entered a couple contests at Munster Performing Arts Center where I won a couple awards. I didn't think I was going to win them. And so I got a couple awards there in high school. And then she encouraged me to take the scholarship contest at the American Academy of Art. And I was supposed to go up there one time and I blew it off. And she called my mom and she said, listen, I signed up Billy for the scholarship contest and he didn't show up. She said, if you want, I could pick him up and take him to this contest to see what he could do. And my mom said, no, we'll get him there. And I went up there. And out of 420 students, I got in the top 10. So I got a semester paid for the American Academy of Art. And that's where I studied for 2.5 years. I went to the American Academy of Art.
So what was the medium that you won the award for in high school? What were you?
It was a watercolor.
Ah.
It was a watercolor of a car. It was a 1951 Buick. I still have it hanging downstairs. And I also got an award for an airbrush. And I was the only one to submit an airbrush painting. So I won best in media, but I was the only one to enter an airbrush painting. So, but I really liked my I really like my watercolor I did of that old Buick. And like I said, I still have it. So
yeah,
that's kind of how I got started.
Yeah, it's interesting.
So after the Academy of Art, you came out of their program. What was your journey moving on from there?
So I was helping one of my teachers frame some paintings on a Saturday at the Academy. And the career services coordinator came in and he asked my buddy Tom, he's like, do you know any students that are looking for a job? And I was like, yeah, I'm looking for a job. And a company called Skyline Design, I called them up that day and I got an interview probably later on in that week at Skyline Design. They did a lot of museums. They did a lot of restaurants, casinos, three-dimensional work. That's where I learned to, you know, that's where I learned to do the sculpting. They put me in the mold making and the fiberglass department. And there was a sculpture department where I learned how to sculpt watching these other sculptors do this. And I'd come in and I'd learn to make the molds and then I would cast the product. And then we'd send that over to the painting department. So I was just in a little niche, but I'm so happy I was in that because I learned such a good skill making the molds. You know, a lot of people could sculpt, but then they don't know what to do after that, how to make the silicone molds, how to cast the fiberglass or cast the whatever other materials,
right.
You know?
No, so, it's invaluable.
Yeah. So I worked there for 5 years, did a lot of projects. I went to all kinds of places, went to New York to work. We worked in California a little bit, wherever these projects were. And I learned how to install stuff with the other guys at the company. And yeah, it was a great first job for sure.
Then where do you move on from there? You picked up your sculpting skills at the Skyline. And then what happened after that?
I worked at Skyline for about 5 years. And I kind of reached, I think, the top of where I could have been there at, you know, I was one of the heads of the mold making and fiberglass department. And then I moved on to another company called General Exhibits and Display. That was also in Chicago. They did a lot of sculpture work there too. We did a lot of museum work. And we also did a lot of trade shows there with crazy deadlines, I remember. You know, I had to get that in. You can't miss a deadline for a trade show. So I worked there for about 2 years. And then the company started having troubles. The owner had passed away. And there was new management came in there. And first thing they did is got rid of the art department. So me and two of my friends that worked at General Exhibits, we started up a company called Artist Inc. And that was in Chicago, and that lasted from 2000 to 2010 is when I worked there. And we did, you know, all kinds of different projects there. We did cruise ships where we had to sculpt some waterfalls for a cruise ship. We had 10 cruise ships to do. So that was quite a big job. And, just all kinds of, you know, different things that pushed me in different ways. And then in 2010... my daughter was born in 2009, and so I had I hung on working at Artist Inc. for almost a year before I just I couldn't drive. I couldn't commute up to the city anymore from Valparaiso with a special needs daughter with all the different, you know, hospitals we had to go to, therapies and that. And I just went on my own totally in 2010.
So, Billy, during all that time, were you, and so when we have artistic jobs like that, that fulfills some of our creative needs but were you doing more personal work for yourself during that time?
I really, you know, I've always done my own personal work, but, you know, work always gets in the way where at least I was happy to be doing artwork while I was at work.
Right.
Not necessarily my own stuff, my own creative stuff. If I had time at the end of the night, that's when I would come home and work on a project, get excited about something I'm working on, you know, but the work was there. And it was probably, you know, like I said, I've always been painting for myself ever since I was in high school and that, always loved it. But in 2013, my wife passed away from a short battle with cancer. And, so in the last, 12 years, I've been really, you know, concentrating on my own artwork, and I still get these good little gigs that keep me going, making the money so I could actually, you know, finance my own artwork.
So tell us about Polly, who is actually your co-creator in the exhibit, but tell us about Polly.
So Polly was born in 2009. We knew right when she was born she was going to have muscular dystrophy, and that was hard to deal with. But like I said, my wife got sick when she was around 3 years old. She was sick for only 30 days. She had gastric cancer and passed away. And that's when me and Polly started painting, shortly after my wife passed away. And I said, you know, we got to do something so she could, you know, have a livelihood of making her own art and trying to make money for herself. And these paintings, you know, she can't even hold a paintbrush. I put the paint down. I give her paint to choose from. She picks the colors out. I'll put the paint on the canvas, and I'll move the canvas around. You know, it's not like I'm painting for her. I'm not touching the painting at all, but I do move the canvas around, and she just puts her hands up. I can't make the paintings without her, and she can't make the paintings without me. But together, they're full of energy, these paintings. You know, once you see them, you'll see just the movement in there, the colors. You can see the excitement. There's so much energy in these paintings, and they're just they're great. I just love them. I love them more than my own artwork because we create them together. And
they're so happy. They're happy and joyful. And
yeah, thank you. Yeah. And we just love doing them. It's a mess, but it's fun. First thing we do is after we're done, we got to clean up. I only use her clothes a couple times before you have to throw them away. I've tried smocks on her, but it's just go at it. You know, I got a special chair for her downstairs in the basement where I got to carry her downstairs. She's almost 100 pounds now, but get a little exercise while I'm painting too.
How often do you paint together?
We definitely paint more in the winter time because I have a studio in the basement and it's kind of dark down there. And when it's sunny outside, I'd rather be outside. But we probably paint, I'd say, two or three times a month in the summertime. But we probably paint once a week in the winter, get her downstairs, paint maybe two or three paintings at a time. And, you know, got to let the paint dry and stuff and then go on to the next painting. And it's really not worth it to go down there and do one painting if I could paint three or four paintings at the same time over a couple hours.
So when you're not doing the work with Polly, do you work in your studio to produce the product you do? Like, I know you have the mini sculptures. I love the one guy on your Facebook page. It's in your headshot section, the circle, and that little guy there. But when do you get to work on your stuff?
When Polly goes to school, I grew up in Maryville. We grew up on 10 acres, and my father built a 5,000 square foot building there because he liked playing with his cars, working on cars. So I sold my parents' place back in 2010. I sold the house and 5 acres, but I kept this 5,000 square foot shop that I use now for a studio in Maryville. That's where I do all my fiberglass work. So when Polly goes to school, she's gone from 7 to 3. That's when I go out to the studio if I have a big project to work on in Maryville. That's where I do the fiberglass and all the large scale stuff I work on. And then, like I said, I also have this little studio downstairs in the basement for painting and making my little sculptures.
Where can we see some of your work, your fiberglass work? Is it you still doing commercial work for people? And
yeah, probably the best place to see my stuff is just on Instagram, BillZo219. And I've been working with this one client for about 7 or 8 years now, where I was at a go. You know, it's crazy how you get these jobs too. I don't advertise much. I used to advertise a little bit. I used to spend so much money and nothing would come out of these. But I was with a friend who's also a sculptor, and he was going to do a big steel sculpture. I have another friend that works for a steel company. So we went over there and he put a quote on my buddy Tom's project, and it didn't work out, but I met this guy and then he saw what I did. And he had a friend call him up. He's like, could you make me 2 dragons out of steel? And, you know, Mike was like, oh, I don't do that kind of stuff. We do structural steel. But I might know a guy that knows how to do these sculptures for you. So I got a call when I was on a golf course. And a guy calls me up and he says, this guy, Mike, he's like, could you make me 2 15-foot-tall dragons? I was like, yeah, I'd love to, you know. So I put a low price on there just because I really wanted the job. And I didn't think I'd get the job. So he's like, I'll send you 50% down on Monday. Could you have them done by the end of the summer? And I was like, yeah. So I ended up working like crazy. I made these two 15-foot-tall dragons. And then when I was installing the dragons, he's, could you make me a 15-foot-tall Bigfoot for next year?
Ooh.
Sure. So I made this Bigfoot that turned into a 20-foot pterodactyl was the next project. And then he had me make another two figures playing with some birds. They had birds on their arms. And yeah, so I've been working with this guy up in Michigan. He has 275 acres, and he just decorates his property with these giant sculptures.
Wow, because I saw the dragon, and I thought, boy, is this for mini golf or something? You
know? Yeah, it's just for a private guy. And then wow. last summer, he had me build him, it was about a 12-foot-tall sea serpent for his private island.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
He's got a private island up near Mackinac Island up in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. So this fella's been keeping me busy for
three, they're fantastic.
It's just a dream client that I've had. And, you know, and then I get all kinds of other little jobs. I just got done building a pig for the Couts Library. they're doing a little thing. I did some work for the library here in Valparaiso. I made a little bear and a fish. And, yeah. Just all kinds of different stuff. And you just never know where these jobs are going to come from. I don't go out searching for them. Somehow they find me some way, you know, and I'm just thankful for that.
It is a specialty.
Well, so, and word of mouth is, you know, that's something you can't buy. I mean, once you get kind of in a circuit of people saying that, you know, the word of mouth is probably excellent.
Yeah. And it's a small group of people that do this, this fiberglass work and these large three-dimensional sculptures. I've known a lot of these people through working at Skyline, working at General Exhibits. And, you know, it's just a nice little group of people here that, you know, I know what some of my friends could do. They got different specialties for me, and we always recommend each other. And it seems like I've been working with the same people for like 30 years now.
There was a documentary made about both you and Polly and your collaboration. I think Leslie Nuss did it. Tell us about that process, having a documentary made about what you guys do together.
Yeah, it was interesting because she also has a son with special needs. That's how we knew each other. She's pretty artistic and stuff. And, you know, she makes clothes and that. And so she just wanted to tell the story how it is like from a day-to-day life, being a single parent, taking care of a special needs kid, and also trying to do the artwork and getting it out there. So it kind of documents pretty much, you know, like my day-to-day life, how I deal with getting Polly on the bus, how I got to make time to go to work. Then I got to come home, take Polly to therapy. And it just shows, you know, our day-to-day, how, you know, we kind of put everything together and just do what I do, you know?
You know, I have a question about Polly. Sure. Does she favor certain colors? Like, because you say she picks out her colors?
She usually goes for the pinks and, like, the turquoise, the kind of, and, you know, I'll kind of pick colors out that'll kind of go together, but I want her to pick out the colors so it's her paintings, you know? Like, I'm not going to put, you know, like, you know, some colors that don't really go together, that don't, you know, just mesh with each other. I just kind of like, you know, I just want her to put it together. And like I said, she really likes the pink paintings and stuff. So I'm always buying a little extra.
Yeah, they're very, the colors, the ones that I've seen, the colors are just so vibrant and hot, you know?
Yeah, yeah, they're cool. You know, she'll also, a lot of her paintings come out looking like landscapes because, you know, she goes horizontally. That's the way she moves her hands. Doesn't move them up and down, moves them side to side. So I'll turn the painting 90 degrees. And then I saw it one day. I was like, every one of these paintings look like landscapes. Or like a sunset or something like that. And they're just magical little paintings.
They are.
Well, you're going to have an exhibit coming up. Tell us about, well, first of all, the process that, well, Hannah discovering you and bringing you into the Chesterton Art Center.
I met Hannah through Leslie Nuss, the one who put together the video. So that's how I met her. I knew about the Chesterton Art Center and that, but I hadn't really gone there too much. So me and Polly are going to have it's just going to be me and her at this show from January 16th through March 1st, and the opening reception is Saturday, January 15th.
Right. And they're going to have a viewing of that documentary there, I think, on February 8th at that center. So they're going to actually get a chance to see your story. What new projects do you have coming up for both you and for Polly after the exhibit? Now, is there anything new or fresh you're working on?
Oh, after this, I've been wrapping up some big projects. I'm working with Tom Terlumpke, who was my teacher at the American Academy of Art. I've been working with him for over 30 years on various projects. But right now we're wrapping up a big mosaic for one of the CTA stations in Chicago. It's 7 feet by 11 feet. Tom designed the whole station, and there'll be glass up there made at Skyline Design where I used to work. And so it's kind of like full circle. I'm working with these same people I started 30 years ago. And I've been concentrating on this show, and I told you I was working on that pig. I also had another thing working on some gnomes a friend had. So I'm just kind of wrapping up everything here. I've been super busy last 6 months, and I'm kind of looking forward to a little break after the show. And by break means that me and Polly will just go downstairs, we'll paint together, and I'll just work on my own artwork.
Well, and that sounds great that you're going to be able to work. And it's a great relationship thing with you and Polly producing this together. And what a way to bond. But actually, some of the work is actually very beautiful. And I know the Chesterton Art Center is very excited to have you both in there.
Yeah. And there's been a couple times where Polly has sold some of her paintings. And the people that were interested in her paintings had no idea that she couldn't walk or talk. They just loved the paintings, which just thrilled me to death. You know, she's making beautiful artwork with having some disabilities, but she's able to do a lot of stuff.
It's a beautiful story, and I'll tell everyone it's called Polly and Her Dad, Billy and Polly Pozell, and they'll be at the Chesterton Art Center January 16th through March 1st. Reception is on the 25th, Saturday, 12 to 2 p.m., and you can see the video there on Saturday, February 8th at 12 p.m. Billy, thank you so much for coming on Art of the Year and sharing what a wonderful story about you and Polly and how you create together.
Well, thank you so much for having me and letting me share my story. And I hope everybody could check this show out, especially just to see Polly's stuff. It's something like you've never seen before. It's just beautiful, magical, super energetic art.
You're a great dad.
Thank you so much for saying that.
Art of the Year listeners, do you have a suggestion for a possible guest on our show? Whether it's an artist, musician, author, gallery, theater, concert, or some other artistic endeavor that you are aware of, or a topic of interest to our listeners. Email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck.com. Did you know that you can also listen to Art in the Air anytime as a podcast at Lakeshore Public Media's website, through Lakeshore's app, or from NPR? Plus, it's available on demand from your favorite podcast website, including TuneIn, Spotify, Amazon Music, Pandora, Apple Music, iHeartRadio, and many more. If you have a smart speaker like Amazon Alexa, Google Assistant, or Apple Siri, just tell to play Art on the Air to hear the latest episode.
This is Hannah Hammond-Hagman of Chesterton Art Center, and you're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM and WVLP 103.1 FM.
We would like to welcome Kara Schmidt to Art on the Air. Kara has a background in interior design, and she is the new program director at the Chesterton Art Center. Before this, she was the special events and development manager at South Shore Arts. Her personal art practice currently is painting. Thank you for joining us on Art on the Air. Aloha and welcome. Congratulations on this new position.
Oh, thank you. So it's been a lot of fun so far. Learning a lot, always busy.
Sounds like you're always busy in general.
Yes, I am.
Well, Kara, what we always want our audience to know is learn about our guests a little bit, their background story. I call it their origin story. So tell us about that, how you got from where you were to where you are now.
Okay, well, I grew up in the Midwest, like so many of us. I grew up in Evanston in Illinois, like just a suburb of Chicago. And actually moved out to Schaumburg when I was 16. I was always pretty much immersed in like arts and culture. I don't think I ever realized it at the time. And I was an only child. And then when I came to like going to college, I could not wait to get out of the Midwest and explore the world. So I wound up at Louisiana State University in Baton Rouge, where I majored in interior design. And then I had a minor in fine art, and I took a lot of English classes. I took a lot of English classes too. I always had like an arts and theater there. After school, I became an interior designer, which was what my degree was in, like I just said. And I really liked that because I don't think I was ever really good at like matching pillows, but I worked in corporate design. And like in the time that I was working at a firm, I worked in like a school and a hospital and those types of places. And I liked it because I liked the idea that I was designing experiences rather than just a room. I always tried to think about how people move throughout the room and how they interacted with the space. And I think that kind of has like stuck with me, even though I'm no longer in interior design. I still really like the idea of creating experience, and that's kind of stuck with me throughout my entire life as an adult. But I started having little babies. I left interior design to work on raising those. And I think again, like, I mean, being a mom is all about creating experience. So we always did a lot of art. We always attended theater and went to museums. That was always like a very important part. I always found that I was like a better mom outside of the house than inside of the house. So we really embraced all that stuff. During that time, we moved around a lot. We lived in Pennsylvania, we lived in Delaware, in Portland, Oregon. And in all those places, I got to experience like arts and culture and get involved in organizations there. And then when we moved to Munster, I actually signed up for a class at South Shore Arts. And the class, it was for my kids, not for me, but it got canceled. And I went and talked to the program director at that time. She said, well, and I said, how do I get involved? Like, how do I promote the arts? How do I advocate here? And she, and that's how I actually started teaching classes. And so I did that for about a year before I joined the staff there as the education coordinator. I was doing that. And then I was also still teaching a lot of the kids' classes. I started the Art and Story Hour program there. I was still hungry, like, to do more and have a bigger impact. So when I had the opportunity to move into, like, development and fundraising, I jumped on it. My time there was like so impactful. It really like opened so many doors for me, and I learned a lot, and I got to meet so many people, and I worked with so many wonderful people. And during that time, South Shore Arts' neighbor is the theater at the center, so I got to know Phil and the crew over there. And because I was teaching all the kids' classes, he was going to do a kids' production, and I was there all the time. He asked if I was interested in being a part of it. And I did. And that kind of like reinvigorated the theater bug in me. So I was Little Red Riding Hood in a modern storytelling of Little Red Riding Hood. And then that was the first one. And then last year we did Santa Went on a Diet. I had the privilege of playing Emma the Elf. And it was around that time that I was like, well, like, being in the theater is so empowering. Like, why can't we create these opportunities for the community? And I started teaching kids classes there. And I did that through the summer. And then now, finally, I've landed at Chesterton Art Center, where I, as you said, I've joined the team as the education director here, where I'm, it's been a lot of fun. I started that in June, and I get to work with all these fabulous, amazing artists and teachers. I do the outreach programming, so we get to create curriculum for 150 kids. There's the Teen Arts Group, which is a free program for teenagers in the area who are interested in the arts. They can just come and have all these experiences, learn more about professional opportunities. We're starting Emerging Art. We're doing the Emerging Artist Society, which is for like new and emerging artists. It's a support system with networking opportunities and, of course, learning and exhibition opportunities. So there's just like, there's so much going on. It's also wonderful and fabulous. And I feel really lucky to like, this is where I am. And I feel really lucky to have made it here. And the path along the way has been pretty good too. So
I, you know, I still don't have a sense of you as a child and what you did in those early years. So what kind of arts were you personally involved with? Were you doing any sort of physical arts or theater back in like elementary school, middle school, high school, that kind of?
So I did all of it. I think all the time. My mom, I guess, she was a beater. She does a lot of beading and has her own bead business. But I never even realized that I was doing like arts and theater. I think I just had like a very active imagination and I was always creating, whether it was like physically or in my head. I did participate in extra art theater programs and I always took art classes. It was just part of my life. So I gathered all these experiences that way. I did, like when I got into high school, I did do a lot of like old photography. Like I had a camera. I actually purchased everything to set up a dark room and then never did, which I can't explain why. So I took theater classes. I took a lot of painting classes. And then when I got to college, I continued that. Like interior design became almost like a functional way to do all that stuff. You had to do it to create space, which
well,
is
yeah, it gives you a good sense of color relationships and also environment, environment. It's like a really good background.
I really jumped around as a child and I loved everything. I loved all of it. I wish I could say, oh, like I did this amazing, like made this huge painting or I painted a mural. I didn't have any of those like singular experiences. It was just sort of like a constant immersion. And that's really followed me through like my entire life, actually.
So. Well, with theater, tell us maybe some of the roles that maybe you played or shows you've been in, anything that's like special in your background.
Well, in my fifth grade play, I got to play Madonna.
Ah.
And that was my onstage screen debut. We actually wrote the play too. And then we played it for our acting class. And I think I was engaged in, I think I was in The Hobbit in middle school. I don't think I was in any of the high school theater plays. But then, then here at Theater at the Center, I was Little Red Riding Hood, and whose cell phone ran out of battery and couldn't follow the GPS and got lost in the woods. And then I played Emma the Elf for Santa Went on a Diet last year. And then this year, we're actually doing, it'll be over by the time everybody hears it, but we're about to start Dickens' A Christmas Carol, and it's like a stage reading, but also very theatrical. And there are three of us in the play. I play five different roles, including the narrator and the Ghost of Christmas Past, Mrs. Cratchit, and a couple others. But it's really fun because you have to put on a different accent for each of the roles and then not have to run around and change my clothes. And then, of course, like the rhetoric is just beautiful because we're using, the original Dickens language, which has been a challenge, but also a lot of fun.
Yeah. And that I think in December 1 through 15. So, missed it by 1st. The time you heard this. But but anyway, I think that's an annual thing that Phil is doing there, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't think Dickens was last year. I think he did something different, but I think it was definitely the year before. So who knows what he has cooked up for next year.
Right. So what brought you to Chesterton? You touched on it a little bit, I mean, in your history there, but you were at the South Shore Arts and everything, but I know a position opened up, I'm on the board for there, I understand that. But maybe for our audience, what brought you to there? And then you can tell us about some of the things you talked a little bit about, some of the things that you're in the last like 6 months that you've accomplished.
I think what brought me to Chesterton was working in all these places and just being a part of all these different communities. Like I saw how I've always seen how like the arts impacts community and how it really raises up the quality of life for people. And the Chesterton Art Center is really all about community and making the arts accessible. I mean, that's why we exist here. and in a really special and unique way. And so when I saw the opportunity to be a part of that and to help promote that and to continue like making the arts accessible, like it was something that I couldn't pass up. So that's why I'm here.
It's so interesting because your South Shore arts job sounds so fabulous as well. It almost seems comparable sort of. So was there?
Well, I think I'd moved away from programming at South Shore Arts. And so I was doing more of the fundraising stuff, which it was great. It was a great experience. And I learned a lot that I could take with me even here doing what I'm doing now. But I think I really realized that like programming and like creating those experiences, once again, it goes back to creating experience, but creating those experiences is really like where my passion lies. It's what makes me happy. It's why I come to work in the morning. And why I probably never stop thinking about it, like ever. So
you're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media 89.1 FM on WVLP 103.1 FM. So when you were talking about it, you said that there is a program for emerging artists. Can you give us some details about what's that like and what you offer for those emerging artists? And I'm sure it's like all age ranges from young to right.
So we are, the Emerging Artists it was started last year actually by the previous education director, and I've been able to continue her mantle. And it's going back to creating community. So we have a lot there. Northwest Indian has all these artists. Like, I mean, we really are lucky. We have such a raging is probably not the right word, but we have such a prolific arts culture, right? I mean, it's a little, if you don't know where to look, you may not find it, but like it definitely exists. But I think some people who are just starting out or are just getting their feet really involved, like I think as an artist, and maybe not just people, but it tends to be a solitary endeavor, they need to find their community. So this is just another way to bring people together. You know, we're working with, you know, we're trying to bring the Indiana Small Business Development to come in and maybe talk about some ways that people can establish themselves as a business. And so we're trying to give them that knowledge basis. We're trying to build their portfolios as far as like exhibition opportunities and things like that. But really and truly, it's about like meeting other artists and making connections, helping each other establish and achieve those goals and working towards that. Some of the members of this they're professional artists, and some of them are just people that are struggling to find time to create because they live in real life now and they have bills that they have to pay and families that they have to support. So there's like a whole range of people that are a part of it, but I think everybody's looking for connection and support. And so that's really what we're trying to provide. I think the last meeting we had an open art studio, and so people just brought their work and we all sat in a circle and we worked on our own pieces. Yeah, it was wonderful.
No, is it a monthly? Do you meet monthly?
Yes.
Or?
Yes, it is a monthly gathering. So we always meet on the third Thursday of the month. So I think the next one is I don't have it written down. I'm pretty sure it's December 19th.
Emerging artists is one of the things that you're going and expanding. And is that going to maybe lead them to the on-ramp program, which sounds like it would be a perfect match for the Indian Arts Commission if they're really serious about making that? I know we've had many people on that we know that done on-ramp. Is that kind of one of the things you might connect them with?
I think the on-ramp program is changing. Am I right? So we'll have to see how that unfolds. But definitely with opportunities like that, I mean, we actually have a member that was a on-ramp graduate this year. So, and one of these days, she's actually going to talk about her experience with that. But yeah, I mean, that's one of the goals as far as like education is concerned, to being able to connect people with the opportunities that are right here in our backyard that they may not know about. So that's a great example of that.
So you've been there for 6 months.
And not long.
I know, but still, nevertheless, you've been there 6 months. What vision do you have for you? You're getting all these programs, but you know, what's your vision to expand the program educations and things like that in the time down the road? Maybe not even within 6 months, maybe in a year or so.
Well, I think we want to continue being like a hub of creative community for sure. I'd love to offer more classes and more times for more people. Like I mean, we to be able to create, there's still people out there that don't have access to the arts. So being able to create something where they can really like find a home here, a creative home here, would be great. Expanding. So
what are you thinking? What are you thinking when you say that? What are you thinking of?
Well, like I think a big buzzword in our community right now is creative aging. And so being able to like offer programs for especially for seniors, I actually got the creative aging grant for artists. And so I'll be offering classes here that for free in a couple in the coming year, but offering more programs like that for seniors, maybe like dipping our toes in like special needs and seeing how we can service those people. Just, you know, people like that, finding niches. I think we've got tons of like senior centers around here, maybe like bridging those connections with them so they have more access to the arts here and making it. And it's not just like, I mean, I'm coming from programming because that's where I spend my time, but even just having them in the gallery or attending receptions, like those are all other ways to connect with the community that I'd like to be a part of too.
Has this inspired you to actually start doing more art yourself? I mean, I realize you're busy with what you're doing there, and that sometimes is the issue, but maybe actually getting into create your own art, maybe saying, well, this has really gotten me up. I'm excited about doing more painting.
Well, she's doing more painting, I think, is what.
Yeah. So I think my whole life, and maybe this is why I'm doing what I'm doing, maybe when it comes down to it, but I've always felt the need to like create in the name of other people. Like when I talk about creating space and community, like that was always for other people. It was never for myself. And as an interior designer, I did that for other people, like making art as a mother, like for my family, it felt like it was of service to other people. And I really like kind of struggled my whole life with the idea of like, it's okay to be creative for me and to do it the way that I want to do it. And I think like in the last year, I finally like wrapped my head around that it's okay that I could do what I want. And I don't have to do it to make other people happy or to improve the lives of other people. And so I'm sort of terrified. I didn't send you guys any pictures because I'm still like, I'm not to a place where I can share that with other people.
But describe it to us. So
my work focuses on embracing that, like the idea of thought and the power of thought and the struggle of like being able to create. How do I put this? A lot of my work comes with the psychology of what it is to create, if that makes sense. Like, where does the emotion come from? How do you give your permission to yourself to create? And I think in my head, I'm still working through, like I said, it's been like a long journey to get to this place where I can finally consistently do it for myself. And so I think a lot of that plays out on the palette, on the canvas. And I tend to use a lot of bright colors, bold contrast.
Is it representational? Is it more abstract?
I'm definitely in like the fantastical. It's not landscapes but it's not, like portraiture, but there's things that aren't correct or extra.
Oh, it sounds exciting.
Is there an art that you haven't done that you'd like to do? I mean, you're talking like about your painting, so to speak, and everything, but maybe like, oh, look at they have ceramics there. You say, or I want to do glass, or is there something else that you would like to explore?
Well, I think I do painting mostly because I am busy with four kids and jobs and everything like that. So the painting is there and it's set up and I can get to it when I need to. But I want to do everything. I do love ceramics. I've taken ceramics classes. I've taught ceramics classes. I love the stained glass artists here at the Chesterton Art Center are amazing. I've dabbled in needle felting. I want to do it all. Like I want to try it all and I want to master it all, but there'll be time for that one day.
Got about 2 minutes left. Looking ahead to 2025, tell us a little bit about some of the things that are going to be happening there at Chesterton Arts Center in this coming year.
Well, we have Billy Pozzo and his daughter Polly are coming to exhibit for they're going to have their work on the walls here, and that's going to be very exciting. I'm really looking forward to their work. And we are going to have like a teen open house on February 15th. So our teen arts group is actually going to help us plan that. They don't know that yet. So surprise! Let's see what else. There's just lots of exciting things to come. Like everything we're going to do, we're going to continue, but we're going to make it bigger and better.
Excellent.
Sounds great.
And how can people find out about the Chesterton Arts Center? Like, where are you located, website, phone numbers, and all that type of thing, as they want to reach out to even you?
All right. Well, you can visit chestertonart.org, which has all of our programs and upcoming events and the stuff in the gallery. And then if you want to get in touch with me, which please feel free, you can email me at programs@chestertonart.org.
Very good. Well, you know, we appreciate you coming on the show and sharing not only your personal journey, but your art journey and your plans for what's going on at the Chesterton Art Center, past and upcoming. So Kara Schmidt, she's the program and education director there at the Chesterton Art Center. And you get the information at chestertonart.org. Thank you so much for coming on Art of the Air and sharing your arts journey.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Best of luck fitting it all in. Sounds exciting.
We'd like to thank our guests this week on Art on the Air, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. Art on the Air is heard Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicmedia.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Media's website as a podcast. Art on the Air is also heard Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at wvlp.org. If you have a smart speaker like Amazon Alexa, Google Assistant, or Apple Siri, just tell to play Art on the Air to hear the latest episode. Our spotlight interviews are heard every Wednesday on Lakeshore Public Media. Thanks to Tom Maloney, Vice President of Radio Operation for Lakeshore Public Media, and Greg Kovach, WVLP's Station Manager. Our theme music is by Billy Foster with a vocal by Renee Foster. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant, South Shore Arts, and the National Endowment for the Arts. We'd like to thank our current underwriters for Lakeshore Public Media, Macaulay Real Estate in Valparaiso, Olga Patrician, Senior Broker. And for WVLP, Walt Reitinger of Paragon Investments. So we may continue to bring you Art in the Air, we rely on you, our listeners and underwriters, for ongoing financial support. If you're looking to support Art in the Air, we have information on our website at breck.com/AOTA, where you can find out how to become a supporter or underwriter of our program in whatever amount you are able. And like I say every week, don't give till it hurts. Give till it feels good. You'll feel so good about supporting Art on the Air. If you're interested in being a guest or sending us information about your arts, arts-related event, or exhibit, please email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck.com, or contact us through our Facebook page. Your hosts were Larry Breckner and Esther Golden, and we invite you back next week for another episode of Art on the Air.
Aloha, everyone. Have a splendid week.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the Air today. Show the world your heart. Express yourself through art. And show the world your heart. Express yourself through art. And show the world your heart.